oh, if you turn it to where it says mute, it doesn't make sound. I turned it there thinking I would do right. Let's see about the power button. On does mean on. Okay, good. What really counts then? I mean, that's a good statement. It's been very helpful to me. But what counts as having been done for Jesus? Now, there's some obvious things, right, on one end of the spectrum or the other. On one end, sharing the gospel with somebody. That counts as having been done for Jesus. On the other end, cheating on a test. That's not going to count as having been done for Jesus. Those are clear. But most of life, I think, whether we intend for it or aim for it or not, fall between those ends of the spectrum. So yesterday, again, this is on my mind. This thing, you know, it's coming, doing various things, and I spent a fair bit of time sitting on a little stool with those little bubble things. I don't even know what it is. Soap of some sort. Blowing these little bubbles, and Timothy was chasing them around. I was thinking about it, and I thought, in some ideas, actually in some of my ideas along the way, I would have thought, well, this doesn't count. What's this doing? You don't talk about stuff that doesn't last. I mean, these bubbles I'm blowing, they don't last very long in and of themselves. They may be the definition of ethereal. You know, they go, boom, they're gone. I had 100 bubbles just 2 seconds ago, and now they're all gone. They've got a few wet spots. That's the best we've got. What do we do? What counts? And, I mean, I felt pretty good about what I was doing at the moment. Counts. It has enduring value. But we have to trace those things down. Because, again, if I can use the two ends of the spectrum thing, we know, we see approaches to life, maybe sometimes in the mirror, that are caught up with things that don't last. We know that. That's the reason we need to talk about it. Listen, don't waste your life on things that don't matter. We know it's possible to give our time, heart and soul, to things that don't matter. At the same time, maybe you've seen, again, perhaps at times in the mirror, the hyper end of that, of feeling like, wow, if I'm not praying, reading the Bible, or sharing the gospel, then nothing but that matters. I think I may have referred to this before. When I was at Union as a student, I was simply taking to the logical end many of the things I'd been taught, which is a problem. Every once in a while, you have people that really take seriously what you say and they follow it to its conclusion. And so this is where I was. Those are the only things that matter. Everything else is a waste of time. And so, therefore, there was no time for anything but those. And then if you had to do some other things, then it's just simply a necessary evil. I shared that with a friend who's now pastoring, and I thought I was kind of crazy radical. I was sharing it with him, and he said, we're sinning when we're sleeping. I thought, whoa, I don't know about that. Are we praying? Are we reading the Bible? Are we sharing the gospel? Are the people in need of the gospel while we're sleeping? Well, we're sinning. I said, he outdid me. But I can't. I'm having a hard time with his logic and where we go. So we have this tension. We need to see how some of this comes together. What does it mean to be spiritual? I've hit a few times along the way this idea that I think sometimes our idea of spirituality is, in a false manner, otherworldly. That is, that is really disconnected from right here and now. I'm wandering not only physically but also on my notes here. But here again, we have to express this clearly. The Bible is so clear that we must set our hearts on things above, where Christ is. So yes, that is otherworldly in that sense. Or if you read Hebrews 11, I mean, this important text on what it means to live by faith. And it talks about that these people were willing to obey in the sense of it, these crazy, difficult obediences. They were willing to do them because they were looking for another city whose builder was God. They were looking beyond right now. So, yes, otherworldly. But what's so important in that is that the obedience they do is very much this world obedience. The Bible's call to think beyond this life is not try to live beyond this life. It's live right here, right now, in light of those realities. So yes, we are looking for a city that's different, that's beyond this. But that's to shape what we do right here. In Hebrews 11, that's the point he makes. This is why Abraham is willing to sacrifice his son right here, right now. Because he is convinced that God is able to raise him from the dead. This is why Moses, in a real striking text there, is willing to forego fleeting pleasures of this world and his prominence as in the royal family in Egypt, but rather willing to suffer with the people of God because he's looking to the eternal. But it's looking to the eternal that shapes right here, right now, what you do. That's how we need to hold these things together. So we want to think about what does spirituality look like then? We've talked about some of the key texts. There are more, but we don't have all the weeks that we might have to look at some of those texts. But I want to take up one in 1 Timothy 5 this morning with the idea of what kind of life does the Bible commend? Now, the word spiritual is not in this text, as it has been in some of the others we've looked at. And it's probably an odd text. Probably doesn't often get a lot of playtime in this kind of discussion. But somewhere along the way, and looking through 1 Timothy, this text really hit me. I thought, there you go. Here is a picture, one place, among others, where God says, you want to know what a godly life looks like? Here's one of them. It's describing ladies, so we'll have to extrapolate a little bit, guys. But it does refer to us in there as well. Well, it's 1 Timothy 5. Beginning at verse 3. And we'll go to verse 16. So first of all, just let me read it. Honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return for their parents. For this is pleasing in the sight of God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God, and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Let a widow be enrolled, if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, and having a reputation for good works. If she has brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work, but refuse to enroll younger widows. For when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry, and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander, for some have already strayed after Satan. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened, so that it may care for those who are really widows. This is quite a text. And we might wonder, okay, now, I really wasn't expecting that text. You know, what all is this? And there are a number of interesting things here, too, that we won't this morning be able to chase down, particularly there when he talks about don't enroll the younger widows, because then they want to get married and leave their former pledge, deny the faith. It could be translated a couple different ways. And what is that? And all these things. A number of particulars there. But one thing we need to say is he's talking about enrolling widows. What is that? Some people think then you have this other office in the church, widows, along with deacons and elders. And this seems to be a real strange way of reading that text to me. He's talking about who is the church going to take on board to financially support? Who are you going to say, okay, we now provide your financial needs without anything else, without you looking anywhere else? This is the church's social security system in meeting needs. But he says, you don't just take anybody, particularly you want to get people who are particularly in need, get all those particulars in there. So if they're younger and they have other possibilities, if they have family, let the family take care of them. And we're only looking for godly widows. The church is not looking to, on an ongoing basis, support those who aren't godly. That's just kind of some basic things. But the main thing I want to notice here is when Paul here, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, wants to give them some particulars about what does godliness look like, then this is pretty striking. He can't stay in generalities because Timothy and this church in Ephesus, they need to really look at these people and go, okay, do you fit this or do you not? So it's quite concrete. He says what godliness looks like in a woman, but then he also talks about the families as well. So let's take that up a little bit. First of all, with a family, notice verse 4. If a widow has children or grandchildren, so this is the family, so all of us are children, I think. So this is going to apply to all of us here. Let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. Now, this is interesting. Obviously, the some return to their parents is monetary support. So he's saying here the basic principle, children ought to care for their parents. In particular here, when they're in need, and he has in view older parents and then their children, they ought to care for them. Now, that care could look like 100 different things, but he's saying that you should look to provide in some way. But the way he describes it, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household. Now, godliness is an important word in 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus. It's translated some different ways, but it is essentially what the faith looks like in practice. Lived out religion, if you will. Something like what James is talking about when he says, pure religion and undefiled before God is, we may talk about that text in a minute. So it's not just listen, you know, children ought to do this. This would be nice. This would be a decent thing. This is the way it works. This is the most functional kind of thing. Practically, it works out this way. All those things are probably true. But he describes this as the practice of godliness. Now, we may sometimes think that godliness or the practice of godliness applies, again, to praying, reading our Bible, sharing the gospel, and those things are good and important. But here, one of the particular marks of showing godliness is caring for your parents. Now, again, that could look like a number of things. It doesn't mean necessarily that you need to be living right where your parents are and doing something. To flesh that out could look like a lot of things. But the heart of it is that there is care and there's willingness to support and do all that could be done in that kind of way. And this is godliness. Follow it along. Well, no, one more thing they almost missed. He says this is godliness, and then this is pleasing in the sight of God. What is it that pleases God? Again, just this week, just talking to my boys about Hebrews 11. When he says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. Then the phrase that's used of Enoch is really powerful. Before he was taken, before he left this life, he was commended as having pleased God. That's not a bad epitaph to have on your tombstone one day. Before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. Paul said he has it as his ambition in 2 Corinthians. Whether at home in the body or absent, to be pleasing to God. Now, what is it that pleases God? A lot of things in the Bible are mentioned that way. But here's one of them. Providing for older parents. again, it's a kind of earthy sounding thing. And this is what I typically call this lesson, is simply the earthiness of true spirituality. It's very down to earth. Still in the families, look at verse 8. Having discussed a little more about the issues of the woman herself, he comes back to the family. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now that's strong language. I wonder if some folks would say, well, maybe this is just rhetoric, kind of overblown. I don't think so. And plus, in Timothy, there are several places, 1 Timothy, where he's dealing with false teaching and what's happening and people straying from the faith. And what's interesting is the language that's here is just like the language when he's talking about people teaching heresy, how they stray from the faith and deny the faith. Same kind of language here talked about when people don't provide for their households. So in a sense, there's heresy, which takes place behind a lectern, and there's heresy that takes place just in everyday life. He says, if you don't provide for your own family, you're worse than an unbeliever. You show yourself to be a pagan. Now, if we take that negative, sort out what the positive is, then providing for your family is an affirmation of the faith. It's a deeply spiritual thing. Now, there's a sense in which I think we all agree with that, but we need to ponder it a little bit. If, I'll take you guys for a minute, since it talks more about ladies in just a minute. But if maybe church one week, we're going, man, you know, I want to be more godly, and I want to serve the Lord more faithfully, and that's a good thing. What is that going to look like? Maybe. At times people would say, well, I mean, if I could be a leader, If I was a teacher, I could do it, but I don't know if I am that. Maybe I could go on a mission trip and I could do that. All those are good things. But we need to contemplate as well that when you faithfully go to work, do your job, and do it well, and you receive your pay for that, and you use that to pay your bills, that is a spiritual thing. When your mortgage payment comes in the mail, and I start to say, you write the check. In my house, I don't ever write that check. My wife does. But it is written, and it is paid for. That is a spiritual thing. You are living up to your obligations, and you're providing. We don't need to toss that away too lightly. Say, yeah, okay, but you know, what else? That is a key thing. Now, here in this providing for the family, it is particularly dealing with finances, but especially with the context and other things talked about, then providing for family will be broader than that as well. Because you provide emotional support and creating a context for life and encouragement and help. What does it look like for a man to lead his family? I do think reading the Bible with them and praying with them is a valuable thing. And so I'm not discounting that at all. Let us do that. But then let that be a piece of encouraging, holding, blessing, disciplining. All these kind of things. This is the context of life. This is a godly, spiritual thing. This is why I think blowing bubbles that disappeared in 2 seconds was something done for Jesus. Because it was something with my little boy that event, I have no doubt, he will never remember. Being as young as he is, he probably doesn't remember it now. But when he's, you know, if the Lord allows and he grows up, I don't think he's going to look back and go, oh, I remember that time and when that happened. And I didn't then try to find a catechism question to put in there with the bubbles. I have done that in some other settings, but it's just as that. I don't think that particular memory is even going to stay there. But what I aspire to is that is just one piece and a broad puzzle, developing a context for a certain kind of relationship in which, hopefully, the gospel makes sense and flourishes. Our life is this broad thing that we're building. There are central pieces where these key things that we more often recognize as spiritual, and they've got to be there, but it needs context. And the context building is valuable and important as well. Now, even more particular here, back to this providing for the family. This is one text, among others, that talks about then the spirituality of work. That providing for our families is then godly. It's an affirmation of the faith. To fail to do so is a denial of the faith. And so, here's something I wrote on it here. Let's read what I have. Are you a husband and father who wants to be spiritual? Don't buy books or go to conferences on new meditation techniques. Get a job, work hard at it, and be disciplined with your money so that you can provide for their needs. Don't tell me about your prayer life if you're not working hard. This is the thing. It's some things I see from time to time, more with college guys where we have these conversations. I pray like this, and I'm doing this in Bible study and these kind of things. That's good. Now, what are you doing as far as work? Well, I spend time by myself praying. That's nice. That's nice. Now, are you moving towards being able to stand on your feet and provide? Well, no. Well, then that's disqualified. These things have to come together. Now, we're on a journey and different things, right? You know, it may take time, but we need to see that. We don't need to allow to creep into our minds a new monasticism where we think if I just get away and I pray a certain amount of time, whatever else, and nothing else there matters. No, that is not it. If we go along and we're not prepared to provide for our families, then we're going to end up denying the faith. Somebody might say, okay, so now somebody lost their job, or they can't get a job, and they got out of school, so now have they denied the faith? No, we're not talking about that. He talks, let me just get the language here again. He says anyone does not provide. It's not I've tried and I've fallen down, you know, whatever. It's the whole thing of the lack of effort, the lack of drive, and these sorts of things is what he's hitting at. This is an aspect of godliness. This is what it means, what it looks like to live out the faith. These are important things. Now, I'm going to take up some of the list of the what he talks about with these widows. But let me pause here for a minute, see if there's any questions or comments. Let me try and see if I missed where you were aiming. Jesus says that you can pray in public. So we'll use church, right? That's what we tend to do. You can pray in public and be displeasing to God, right? You honor me with your mouth, but your heart is far from me. So we can do things which are normally godly, spiritual things, but be a waste because we're doing it to impress other people or whatever else. Our hearts are far from Him. I am now arguing that providing for our families, being diligent with our jobs, is a godly, spiritual, God-pleasing thing. Well, if prayer can be done in such a way as to be fake, well, then it's true this can be as well. The answer there, then, just like the answer with prayer, is not, well, I quit praying about a year ago because I felt like my heart wasn't really in it. And I decided until my heart could be in it, I wasn't going to pray anymore. No. Let's keep praying and let's try to get better with it. And you're going to find, you're never going to have all your motives pure, but you're going to keep moving that way. So also with the job, right? It's not, well, I kept finding that I was all these wrong thoughts or motives or whatever else from my heart, so I quit my job. No, keep with that, but deal with your heart. Did I hit what you were asking? Yeah. Yeah, and we have to keep wrestling with ourselves. Tom Schreiner's story comes to mind here. I was talking with him several years ago about a possible job change. Wrestling with it. Should I do this or should I not? Happened to be at a meeting where he was going to be around, and so I asked if I could talk to him and maybe get some wisdom. It's encouraging to me to think back on, because he just listened. It's like, yeah, I don't know. So I'm in good company, because I say that a lot to people now. Yeah, I don't know. But I said to him, if one of these options appealed more to wrong motives, if one of them appealed to my pride more, is actually how I said it, then I could say, don't do that one. If one of them stirred up right motives more than the other, I could say, I should do that one. But the honest thing is, as I think about the two of them, it varies, right? At one time, there are good things that come to my mind with this, and other times, merely self-centered pride things. But then I think about this one, and the same thing happens. And his response, and Lee could probably give us an imitation of the sound, but I leery of giving it a whirl. He just said, "Oh, Ray, your motives are going to be sinful no matter what you do. So don't think about that. We got to think about whatever else." And he wasn't telling me, "Hey, just be sinful. Don't worry about it." He was more of saying, he was kinder than this, but more of saying, "Hey, get over yourself. You think you're going to be sinless in one of these or the other? No. So drop that now. Let's think about some real stuff." And that was very helpful. So we're always going to have that going on in us, and we need to fight it. But even like we engage our jobs. What's at the forefront of my mind in my job from day to day varies. And there is a group of worthwhile motivations. It's not just one. There's a group of them. And certain ones may be first on the list at different days. So it's not always the first thing in the front of my mind of saying, I'm making sure I'm providing for my family here. And it's in the group. Sometimes it's the opportunity to speak into the student's life, or seeing this person who's going on and what they're doing, or advancement even, professionally, accomplishment in something. That also is not a bad thing. It can be, right? It can move over into simply self-centered pride. But God has made us such that we do yearn to accomplish, and that's a good thing. There are projects that we want to get done. We want to do them well. And, well, is there pride in there? Well, in our real situation, yes, there's going to be mixing there. But it doesn't mean everything there is wrong. We want to accomplish something to move our job forward, to get this product done well. And we want, right, when we do business with people out here, we want people thinking that way. It's one of the reasons why it's right to go to Chick-fil-A, is because there are people there who want to do it well, as opposed to some other places. But you don't want to buy your car from people at a plant who said, "We were really wrestling with pride, and so we've made sure we are not going to be proud about the stuff we produce here." You don't want to get surgery from a doctor who says, "I just want to try to get by here. I'm going to make my money one way or another. I can provide for my family and do whatever I want, but I don't want to be worried about being the best I can at my work." So we need, there's a proper sense of even ambition, as long as we understand it rightly. But we do have to keep wrestling with this. And we have to hold several things together. I am this morning wanting to hammer the point that working steadily and faithfully and providing is a godly thing. And don't just think these other things are. Now, in some other settings, I have been where I've said to men, guys, listen, I know it's a good thing that you work your job, you bring your money home, but listen, you know, you need to be thinking about the spiritual condition of your family. You ever think about reading the Bible at home? You know, so, yes, we have to hold these things together. And from time to time, we hit one hard on the other because we're trying to see which way is the ship leaning. And what tends to happen is if there's a lesser, if the spiritual temperature is less in a certain group, then you need to hammer, hey, pray and read the Bible with your family. If the spiritual temperature has risen some, then sometimes you need to come back and say, whoa, 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 that's not the only thing. Let's hold both these things together. Does that make sense? Good question.
That would be, I was thinking when you were saying that, just to add to that a little bit, you know, Matt was saying about pitfalls. I mean, if you took it to the opposite end, you know, workaholic, work too much, consumed with it for maybe just for the idea of being consumed with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I struggle with working too much sometimes and to make sure we're doing both and not walk out here and say, oh, Ray said we provide for our families, we work hard, we're spiritual. Oh, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
You know, 80 hours a week and provide for my family.
That's right. And you could also abuse that to say, I took this, I'm in this job, I took this job and made less money. That must be ungodly. Well, not necessarily. We can have all, we're just really good at coming up with lies in our heads. Because in one situation, you can find somebody going, I got two job opportunities, right? This one pays this much, this one pays more. I ought to do what's more. Or if somebody says, let's take this. Somebody says they're going to take the job that offers more pay. And somebody says, oh, you're greedy. It's not all about money, you know. And you say, oh, really? You know, thank you for your estimation of myself. That is all I'm about, you know. I mean, there could be a wrong motive in there, but there could be a right motive, right? But I hear that a fair bit, not necessarily here, but just various places around. Instead of saying, I mean, that can be a good thing. At the same time, someone might take a job paid less. And that's not necessarily then going, oh, well, see, they're less spiritual. And that's worried about providing for the family. No. There's a lot of variables at play, right? And we have to weigh a lot of things. You could take either one of those decisions for good reasons. This is not where I'm going today. Let me just hit this over here. This is one reason why we're not supposed to go around judging people's motives just off the top or along the way. Because we often don't know all the other variables around. Now, if you're walking along somebody close enough and you believe that you saw other evidence of greed and they made the one decision, then if that's a concern enough in your mind, then you go to them privately and you say, hey, I just wanted to ask you, is this what's going on? Then you hear them. Or whatever else. But there are a lot of variables that go into these things. And we don't want to push either one to the wrong extreme. So that's a good point, Doug. We want to believe, and as the Bible points out here, this is part of what it means to live out the faith. It's not the only aspect of living out the faith, but it's a piece of it, along with these other things.
Hey, Ray. Is there encouragement in there somewhere for the diligently seeking but still currently unemployed?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. That's part of what I was even kind of alluding to with the kind of different jobs. Yes. And earlier about, it's not saying if somebody doesn't have a job, then that, you know, they're done for. But it does mean that this is significant. And then we can't say, well, this doesn't matter because spiritual things are the only things that matter. No, this does matter. But if we're diligent and we can only do what is in our realm to do, and then we rest in that. In that sense, there's a lot of parallel to evangelism. Our task is to share the gospel. And if I share the gospel and Brian shares the gospel and he sees like 10 people come to faith in a week and I haven't seen anybody respond to the gospel in months, who's the reason that there's a difference between the two of us? It's the Lord. If we've been faithful to share, that's our job. So also here, we're diligently seeking, I think that's the phrase you use, then we're doing what we need to do and willing, right? You know, when the point comes, willing to do what we need to do, not too good for this or that, then we're doing our part, and then we have to trust the Lord and rest in that. Good question. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Which takes some of the mystique and pressure off of. Just honor the Lord in what you're going to do. Very good. Ryan.
Could you expound on the word provide, whether it's like a man for his direct family, wife and kids, or a child for aging parents?
Mm-hmm. Here, what he says is, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and that in the context, I believe, would be the aging parents, and especially for members of his household. So now he's come in a little tighter. I think probably here he has in view parents, but then that's broader than that. So then his children, his parents, the ones closest to him. Because, you know, typically here in the first century, the family you have is, when they say family, it's going to be much more extended than what we tend to think of. But when he says for his own household, that's more like what we're thinking of. So the way he words it brings in to bear also the children in this kind of setting, and then that's the general principle that he's applying here directly to aging parents, but he has now touched the wellspring of a principle that's broader than that. Does that make sense?
So, what I was getting at is like the term provide itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's probably where our root issues are when it comes to, or things like that, you know, the man who works 90 hours a week so that he can, you know, give everything in the world to his kids
right.
That need. So, yeah, I'm, what I'm getting at is just the term provide. Like, we're talking bare essentials, we're talking some middle.
Yeah. The word, that word itself will not tell us the answer to that. But we do have other things in the scriptures of showing he's not saying, right, you know, give whoever's in view everything they might ever possibly want. He does mean care for and meet needs. Now, he doesn't then give us exact boundaries on what that is, and it could look different in different settings. But it is provide and not indulge. You know, he could use that word if he'd wanted to, and he didn't. So I think that's part of the key thing. But we can't even there say, you know, this meant this much denarii per child, and extrapolate that into today. So it means in this place it's this, but with the exchange rate, it's, you know, we don't have that either. But it is that basic care for, provide, meet the needs of.
In my version, it says relatives, but more especially immediate family.
Yeah. Yeah, members of his own household here, so the same thing. Yeah, exactly. All right, let me move us in. Oh, Lisa, that's all right.
Within the passage, it refers to also providing also that it brings into the spirituality of other people. I'm wondering if, especially when you're dealing with parents, in our culture now, if you've got government that people can fall back on, but if you have unsaved parents or unsaved in-laws, and your household, you're trying to raise a godly household, Would it be more spiritual to say, you go rely on the government because I don't want to bring your own spiritual heathen element in on my family and be striving against you?
Yeah.
Is that worth pursuing at this point?
It's a good question. It would be bigger than all that we can do here. Now, the scripture would make it clear that our general obligation to our parents is not rooted in their faith. And I said general because what that looks like, the particulars of it could vary, whatever, whatever. But we need to look to our parents. Now, the way you worded it, though, had to do with bringing them into your house. Because what that looks like to care for them, again, is wide open. It does not necessarily mean that you have them come live in your house. that you care, that you look into, you know, of what can be done, what should be done, and that you deal with those questions, I think it's clearly here what's required. One of those could be to say, you know, I think what is best and right here is not for them to be in our house, but let's see what we can do in other ways. That could be entirely legitimate. And what we are required to do also takes into bearing, you can abuse this, but what we're able to do. Responsibility and ability go together, you know, so it's not like, well, there's only so much you can do in various settings. But what that looks like to care for can be a lot of different things. It's not particularly or necessarily bringing them to live with you. Then variables would have to come into play for a lot of other things. All right, let me push us into this description of the widows here. Because what does a godly woman look like after 6 decades? This is what he says here. And so that's part of the reason it stood out to me is it's interesting. Some ladies here would say, well, I'm not there yet. If you are there, well, here you go. If you're not there, you got to know what you're aiming for. You got to know what you're shooting at. And then, guys, we'll see a number of things here that at least gives us a picture of what God places a premium on. In verse 5, I have this out in a chart, actually, that you can get on the website if you'd like. But verse 5. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God. So there's one. Fixed her hope on God. That's one I think we tend to think of as more spiritual. And it is. Here it is. Verse 5, continuing. She continues in supplications and prayers night and day. So she's a woman of prayer. Verse 6, in the negative. So in terms of the positive, what is she not? Not self-indulgent. I think the NAS has given to wanton pleasure. That's not godliness. Verse 9. having been the wife of one husband. Now here, this is not, okay, so that's, any godly woman has to have been married. He's talking about widows. So by definition, he's talking about ladies who were married, right? You know, just following the logic here. So for those who have been married, you probably heard some discussion here, wife of one husband of one wife earlier in chapter 3. And I think what this is referring to is marital faithfulness. It's not even saying that a woman who was widowed can't remarry, because he tells the younger ones to do that exact thing in the same text. It's talking about marital faithfulness. This is part of what godliness looks like. So there's actually a lot more here, but let me just linger there for a moment. That's obvious, right? I mean, I don't think anybody who's been around here for a while could think, oh wow, I never thought of that your marriage would matter to God. I think we talk enough about that. But realize then, here's a mark of godliness or spirituality. So, for those of you who are married, man or wife, when you do something that is working on your marriage, these are spiritual things. If you buy a card, and you give it to your spouse in a particular way, you want it to encourage or build up or whatever else. That is a spiritual thing. As you build your marriage, and it could look like all kind of things that don't look as significant or whatever else. If you use your money to buy, say, a card, I don't know, flowers or something, you know, something like that, we might say, well, you know, that doesn't last. It's going, flowers are going to die and throw away. You wasted your money. Maybe. Maybe not. But if we're doing something, investing in our marriage, this is kingdom work. This is pleasing to the Lord. This is godly. It's kingdom work, right? Because marriages are the representation of the gospel. Well, we'll keep going. Verse 10. Having a reputation for good works. Now this, I think actually this phrase is the kind of theme that is unpacked by the things that follow. Good works is a mark of godliness. Now, what are those good works, though? This is where you see how earthy they are. If she has brought up children. Now, again, he has in view here particularly married women. But there, someone might say, well, you know, the person who's lost their job through no fault of their own, does that slam them? Or the woman who can't have children here, does that slam her? No, he's taking up a general thing. Besides, the language is interesting. There is a verb for bearing children, you know, in KJV, to beget. That's not the one that's here. Because what he's praising is not simply the production, but it is the nurture, has brought up children. And so I have seen, along my years, a number of ladies who never had their own children who have worked in helping to bring up children in various ways. And this is one of those things, a reputation for good works. Now, again, we have some moms in here and some who know some moms. Ah, it's even Mother's Day. I planned that just now. He says this is part of the mark of godliness. So, ladies, you have children, you aspire one day to have them. Mothering is a messy job. Now, fathering is as well, but we're talking about you for the moment. Tammy and I laugh a lot of times about something will happen, particularly if we're with a younger couple and something happens, and say, oh, I hope I didn't gross you out and you're at the table. And it's like, oh, it's real hard to gross me out now. I mean, it used not to be, but you don't want to know what all I've had my hands in between parts of the meal at various times. It's just part of the deal. You kind of get used to it. But it is discouraging at times, all these kind of things. You hear some of the ladies talk about this in a prayer meeting. Part of what we need to be reminded of, this is spiritual life. And when they're laboring in this way, and maybe then confined particularly to this work and not as much engagement with others, they need to be reminded, this is spiritual work. This is valuable work. It's not as if they could go out and do a ministry, that would be more valuable. Not at all. This is listed in God's book as one of the marks of godliness. And we need to hold on to that and say, yes, that's valuable. What my wife says, what I say to her from time to time, is she is laboring day by day on a very important mission field. She has 5 unconverted little ones. I'm there with them, but not like all through the day like she is. That is important work in the shaping of them. So that needs to be emphasized. Well, he also mentions in verse 10, hospitality to strangers. So hospitality, a mark of godliness. Wash the feet of the saints. We're talking about messy work, and we don't do that. But you know the setting, when Jesus washed the feet of the disciples, and how this was a valuable task at the time, but a menial one, one thought to be quite low. And so when he uses it here, he may even be using it a bit symbolically, but the idea here is support work. Laboring in various ways for the sake of the saints. Holding up, encouraging, helping, these kind of things. We might call it behind the scenes kind of work. This is a mark. This is what good works look like. Good works aren't always going to be on the stage. They're just done at various places. When you look out and say, in this context, well, this is a woman here who is known for helping, meeting needs, all kind of things. Not trying to draw attention to herself necessarily. Just meeting basic needs. And so he says, mentions assisting those in distress. And then he closes that part with devoted to every good work. This is spiritual. He talks about in verse 13, again, whether it's not, gossips, idlers, busybodies, wandering about, stirring up stuff. That's not it. But in verse 14, when he speaks to the younger ones, marry, bear children, manage their households, and don't give any occasion for slander. Family and domestic life there again, hit on as valuable and important. Well, we're actually just a little bit past time. I want us just to see those things as we think about what does it mean to be spiritual and what do I need to do? What does it look like to follow the Lord? It is going to look different for us as we live it out in our own context. But I do want us to be reminded it's not just flashy things. It's not just things that people notice, but it is day to day, very earthy kind of things as we live out the obligations that the Lord has for us. There is no division between sacred and secular. If you're a believer, all of life for you is to be spiritual. And whatever engagement that is, and then living that out wisely with biblical priorities, that is pleasing to God. And this is what spirituality looks like. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you that you have spoken and you teach us. Help us to think well about these things, as I prayed earlier, not so that we might be impressive with knowledge, but so that we might know how to live in such a way as pleases you. We do pray for those who are at work bringing up children, that you would encourage and bless them in those labors. We do pray for those who are diligently seeking jobs, who are people known to provide and yet at a point of transition. Pray that you would bear them up and provide that they might provide. Help us, Lord, to be people who see you at work in everyday life and not people addicted to the glamorous or the catchy, but instead devoted to everyday faithfulness so that you might be pleased and that the kingdom might advance, because we know that it really is for our good and also for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.